Ladies and gentlemen, it's that time of the bi-weekly calendar that you look forward to so much when a new episode of Tangential Banter drops. As always, my name is Ben Mell, and I'm here joined by my co-host, Jack Korzenowski.
What's up, y'all?
Territories.
It is not territory time. Ooh, I like the sound of that. Territory time.
I thought
should I just play the clip just cuz?
Just yeah, if you got it.
Okay, you gotta say the word.
Territory.
Territory.
Unfortunately, we don't actually have Terry with us today, but it's such a good clip. You gotta play it periodically.
So we're not going to have, why would we have Terry on, Ben? What segment could we possibly do with Terry as a guest? Can you remind me? I'm drawing a blank.
I don't know. Dissing Terry or Terryopoly.
That's not it.
No. Knew it started with a T, though.
I think so.
Terry Tory?
Terry Tory.
I'm literally just shaking my head right now.
It's the, what's his name? It's the, not Ron Paul.
Ron Swanson?
Who's the yeah guy at the end of that clip?
You're talking about the presidential candidate?
Yeah.
Howard, was Dean?
Was it Howard Dean?
Yeah, the Dean scream.
Yeah.
Yeah!
Yeah!
Yeah. The Dean scream, man.
They use that, and I've brought it up before. They actually use that as a sound effect in a scene of Breaking Bad.
Wow.
If you remember, have you ever seen the show?
No, I haven't.
There's a scene where an explosion goes off and like all these people go running and it's from within a building, so all this glass goes shattering and like in all the din of the explosion and the people panicking, you just hear the yeah in the background.
Classic.
I'll have to send it to you.
That reminds me of if you ever watched the special features from the extended edition of Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yeah.
Where they're talking about their sound mixing and Foley artists and all the different inspirations they had and, like, you know, how they put sounds together, like, for the, I want to say it was the Fell Beasts that the Nazgul ride.
Oh.
Where it's, like, they combined a donkey bray with, like, a, I think it's actually Fran Walsh's scream, like, Peter Jackson's wife, and then... I can't remember what the third part was, but they like blended those all together to make the sound, that sound of the kind of wail that the animals make.
I know I like those stories of how they get certain sounds are always so cool. And some of the stuff that I know, like, cause I watched the same special edition. They found like some abandoned, like military, it wasn't quite a fortress, but it was like some concrete bunker, and
yes,
the inside was like a really long concrete hallway, and then it had like these concrete like staircases where it was kind of just like a tube going down with, you know, stairs, and they would just throw stuff down or echo like in that hallway, and they were using the sound effects for different stuff. That sounds like a fun job, but I know for some reason it stuck out in me that in Star Wars Episode 2, for the Republic gunships, like, and they have kind of that, like a chug 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 engine sound. They actually use like a World War I era biplane or something for that. Yeah, I don't know why. It just stuck out to me. I thought that was kind of cool.
That just reminds me, we were visiting Michigan recently, and I was talking to my dad about the Lego movie and remembering they have a pirate ship in one of the scenes where they literally, for the sound effect of the ship It's supposed to be like a sailboat, but it also has engines. I don't quite understand. Anyway, the sound effect for it is literally just someone going, it's like,
wait, something with your mic or your audio leveling kind of muffled that sound. What are they doing?
I don't even know what the, making a raspberry sound with their lips.
Oh, oh yeah. I think I remember that.
But so I was thinking about that. And then, it reminded me that last year we were watching, Robin Hood, the animated Robin Hood,
the one down the street. Animals?
Yeah. And so our friends were hosting like a movie night under the stars on the vacant lot next to their house.
In February?
No. This was last summer.
Oh, I think you said last week or something. Okay.
No. And I noticed for the first time during that movie that a lot of their sound effects are done by voice actors, where like if a rug gets pulled out from under somebody, it just makes this sound like,
huh.
And then the sound of what's the snake's name? Hiss. The sound of his like tail spinning is very obviously someone else making that sound with their mouth.
Hmm.
So they were, it was fairly old, but they were like, how can we do this quickly and cheaply in a way that no kid is going to care about?
Yep, right.
I guess we'll do it ourselves.
They say sound engineering or audio engineering has come a long way. But they can get really creative with like, yeah, we made this sound by combining like these sounds.
Right.
Just sort of like, it's like so cool how they can do that so effectively. Yeah. Like combine these three sounds that sounds nothing like, you know, the three things that they mix together into this whole new unique sound.
In a similar vein, not with sound, but I remember seeing, going back to the Lord of the Rings extras, where they were talking about the animators and how they all had like mirrors next to their computer monitor so that as they were animating facial expressions, they could like make the face themselves in the mirror and then animate it. So they would like know which muscle groups were moving and like where an eyebrow would be and that kind of stuff, just as a frame of reference.
Which you have to make funny faces for a living.
Yeah. So it's like, what face do I want this character to make? I'll make that face myself, then bring it back to the character, right? And then tweak it so that it's correct for their physiology and stuff like that. But
that's cool.
Yeah, it was really smart. They did a lot of stuff that is just kind of, when you see it, it's like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. But I never would have thought of it.
Right. That's what the experts always do. They always make you feel like, how could I not have thought of that?
Right. Yeah. Which, speaking of things that we did not think of, we have a very rare segment for the first few minutes here, which I don't know if we've ever done, in which, much like a newspaper, we need to issue some retractions.
And the reason why this segment is so rare is because we're never wrong.
Yes, that's correct. And also because we have formally disallowed ourselves from fact-checking on the air by your request, may I remind you, dear listeners. So in the instance that facts are incorrect, you have only yourselves to blame.
That's true. It's really all your fault.
Yeah. So with that in mind, we would like to heap on some shame for your failings at not letting us fact check.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one, which was brought to my attention, I believe by my lovely wife, was that we were recently talking about, I think it was Little House on the Prairie. This was a few, like half a dozen episodes back. And I said that it was written by Louisa May Alcott, which was a factual error. Louisa May Alcott wrote Little Women.
Mm.
Little House on the Prairie was written by Laura Ingalls Wilder. So in hindsight, I can see how I did it. You know, my brain was like,
Wow, Ben, such a rookie mistake. Gosh. Yeah. Didn't know like, offhand the difference between Little Women and Little House on the Prairie.
It's like 19th century story female author with three names. They both have little in the title. You could see how maybe there'd be some confusion there, but I did want to make that correction.
Is it Louisa or is it Louisa?
I've always heard Louisa, but maybe it's Louisa.
I've only heard Louisa, but that's not a common name.
It is not.
How about we compromise and pronounce it a way that we know is false? Louisa.
Or if you like went French, Louia.
Ah.
Louia. Like short for hallelujah. Yeah.
Yep, that's where it comes from.
Okay, that was retraction number one. Number two was a retraction that I realized after the fact, pertaining to the term Jack used to describe a group of owls. And the term you used, Jack, was?
Congress.
A Congress. Which is more correctly associated with the bird Raven. And the most common usage of a term for a group of owls is...
Oh, you waiting for me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, is a parliament. I think it's more appropriate because parliament to me... I'm an American, so obviously I don't suffer the, I'm sure, poor leadership of that body of government. So I view it with a more positive light. Parliament just seems, you know, you got a bunch of guys in petticoats and powdered wigs all being like, I say, dear sir, and just all proper with each other, which is much more fitting to owls than a Congress, or at least our Congress.
It does carry with it some like imagery of dusty moats, you know, of sunlight and pipes and feathers being ruffled.
Right.
It fits owls very well with some velvet maybe as well.
Now, a Congress would be a much more appropriate group name for a bunch of jackasses together.
Yes, the very famous
look
species
at that
bird.
Look at that Congress of donkeys just braying and kicking each other in the nuts.
Well, actually, half of Congress is. Ta-da!
How neat is that? That's pretty neat.
Yes. What was the other one? We had a third.
There was one I wanted to bring up.
Yeah. I can't remember what it was, so go ahead.
But before I do, you said it was a retraction, the one about the Parliament versus Congress of owls. It was a retraction that you only realized in retrospect or after the fact, you said, which I hope is true, because that would mean otherwise you just lied to our audience on purpose. Because you don't realize before the fact that you're going to say something wrong unless you are intentionally deciding, I'm going to say something wrong.
Well, no. So I didn't. How do I describe the situation? As we were talking about it, I was like, that doesn't sound quite right, but I couldn't put my finger on it. And so a few days later, it came back to mind, and I was like, oh, I'll just look up what it was and realized that I was pretty sure we had said Congress and that it was actually Parliament. And so I just made a mental note of like, oh, we need to correct that. But I couldn't, obviously, at the time, because of our constraints, I couldn't fact check to get it right in real time.
But hold on. My point is, how would you not realize a retraction until after the fact?
Well, a retraction, certainly not. You wouldn't.
So then why did you bother saying you didn't realize it until after the fact?
Well, I didn't... The part I didn't realize for sure was that the term parliament is applied to owls. The retraction is self-evident to be later, right?
Why? I apparently not, because you said that there's a retraction I realized only after the fact.
Yeah, the retraction was what I was referring to was my realization of the term for a group of owls, or remembering of the term group of owls, not the retraction.
Okay.
It was a misspeak on the front, not on the...
I'll take it. acceptable.
Well, I hope so.
Okay, so the third retraction is is in our last episode talking about the how much wood could a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood. When we were discussing how much does a woodchuck weigh, Ben, you said something like, oh, probably like 10 to 15 pounds. And I said, no, they're way heavier than that, like probably closer to 30 or 40. And then I looked it up after the fact, and no, they do weigh like the average is like 13 pounds. It was like smack dab in the middle of your estimated range.
Boom!
And I was way off.
Knew it started with an S, though.
Ah, classic.
No, so that was what kind of made me a little suspicious. And I obviously didn't bother looking it up, but, you know, I've seen a handful in the wild and knew roughly their size. And it was just like, all those furry wild critters weigh less than you think.
Right.
Because there's a lot of fur and they're not usually that well fed. So it's, yeah, it's kind of a bag of skin.
It just sounds bad. A bag of skin. Wait, if it's a bag of skin, are you saying it is a bag made out of skin, but there's nothing inside, or what's inside isn't really mentioned? Or are you saying it is a bag containing skin?
Well, what I meant was the proverbial coin purse. From our discussion last time.
Oh, don't bring that back up. I'm going to just curling actually, up in the fetal position.
The fecal position. that's a Michael Scott-ism for those who aren't familiar. But I did actually hear from one of our listeners that the quote about the purse still being there, you just take the coins out of it, was, I can't remember exactly, but a favorite quote from any podcast of all time. I'm not sure what that says about us or our listening audience, but I'll take the compliment at face value. I also did hear after our last episode from, well, a couple people I hadn't heard from in the past, just expressing their followership and interest in our topic. So that was encouraging. And as always, if you're someone who's out there listening and you've never sent in a topic or you've never told us that you're listening, never, interacted in any way, we'd love to hear from you. I think it's always fascinating to find out who is actually listening regularly because there are a number of you and to learn a little bit about why you listen or what you find interesting because we can always make changes to better suit that as well.
True. Now, I want to say we shouldn't pressure them. Like, if they want to just sit back and listen, I can empathize with that.
Yeah, it'll be a good lurker.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
Nope. No, that's fine.
I lurk.
I was just merely clarifying that it is meaningful to hear from our audience and to know from beyond just the handful of immediate family and friends who chime in regularly to know who else is out there
right.
And what they like to hear.
I'll agree. You know, it's always nice to hear, you know, you are special, especially when it's coming from somebody that isn't your mom.
Did you like create a list of one-liners that you wanted to work in here?
No.
No. Okay.
I do. That does remind me of a one-liner I use every now and then, which is, yes, yes, you're unique and special, just like everyone else.
That's a classic. Okay, any other retractions for our initial segment here?
Not that I remember. I know if I ever come across a retraction, I tend to try to bring it up the beginning of the following episode. It's another discussion point.
Oh, on that note, so for anyone who was trying to estimate how many woodchucks to hire to chuck their wood, you will need to adjust your numbers up to account for the significant mass difference from what our estimates used.
Would it be a linear?
About 2.5 times.
Would it be just linear? It'd probably be pretty close to being linear.
Yeah. So if you had, like 2 woodchucks planned, I'd probably hire 5. You should be safe. I do also know a good woodchuck chucking service. So if you want a recommendation, just let me know.
Wait, no, hold on. You just that's a whole different thing. A woodchuck chucking service. So they chuck woodchucks. Like their service is they will come to your house. They will like, do you have any woodchucks in the area? And then don't worry, we'll find them. And they'll find it, and they won't get rid of it. They will just hook it up in some sort of like trebuchet sort of system, and just chuck it a few yards away.
No, this is where. So our audience needs some woodchucked. So if they need 5 woodchucks, they got to hire a woodchuck chucker to come chuck 5 woodchucks into their wood pile to do the chucking.
So you chuck the woodchucks into the pile of wood, and then the woodchucks chuck the wood after having been chucked into the wood themselves.
Yeah. Now you're getting it.
So if we were to
basically
bring them and then plop them on the ground, we would not be a woodchuck chucking service. But you're saying specifically chuck them into the wood pile.
Yeah, it's a guy kind of like Ned from South Park who, he's got racks of woodchucks in the back of his truck and just chucks them out into your pile.
There you go.
Problem solved, you know? Okay. I think we have covered all of our formal retractions, so we hope you have enjoyed understanding the world a little bit more realistically with the corrections that we've provided. Now, having said that, we have a topic at hand, and Jack, you said you have some thoughts on it, so I'm going to introduce it, and then I will pass it over to you to get your initial thoughts.
I like it.
And the question at hand today that we want to dive into with an inordinate amount of detail is, what is the definition of a sport, and how does it differ or overlap with the definition of a game? And the context for this question is one that's come up in recent years with the term esports. And I've kind of been wrestling with this question of, should they really be called esports, or are they just e-games? And does it matter? So I'll turn it over to you, Jack.
The esports question specifically, because they're called esports, to me, in my brain, indicates that it's a sport that you play electronically. And by what I mean by a sport you play electronically, I mean you are playing like an electronic simulation of a sport. That doesn't mean the engagement in that is itself a sport, but you are engaging in a simulation of a sport. Doesn't mean that esports themselves aren't sports necessarily. I'm just saying that's what in my brain an esport is. So the designation of esport doesn't in itself one way or the other say if the actual thing is a sport or not. Now, in the sports versus games and what defines a sport and is there any overlap? And if so, what is it? My gut reaction is that all sports are games, but not all games are sports. What do you think on that?
Okay. It's a starting point. We can build off of it. Do you consider running a game?
Ooh, okay. That's a good, well, is running a sport?
Yes. Yeah,
okay, I would just say it's self-imposed torture, but to each their own.
I mean, that's a lot of sports are self-imposed, just to varying degrees.
I actually, when I was in high school, I was in cross country and track, and I really enjoyed the track meets, and it definitely did feel like competitive and fun and got you into it. And the track meets, like just running 5K, those were torture. The only pleasurable part of that whole experience was when you're at the very end and you see the finish line, like 1 to 200 yards up. And you just, however exhausted and spent you were, you get that second wind. At least I did. And I was just rabid for that finish line. And I just wanted it so bad. Not because I was like so miserable I wanted it to be done necessarily. I just saw it and I just wanted it. It's like a dog chasing after a car. He doesn't really know what to do with it. He just knows that he wants it. It was like that.
Nice Dark Knight reference.
Like, yeah. So
what you're saying is you were sandbagging the rest of the race. That's my takeaway.
What does sandbagging mean?
Cruising? Just not really pushing?
Well, you have to cruise in long distance races. In fact, the skill, a big part of your skill or your ability as a runner is how well you can pace yourself. Because if you pace yourself, if you go too fast at the beginning, you're going and you push yourself too hard, too quickly. No, that's the wrong way of putting it. If you just push yourself too hard at a non-sustainable pace, you're going to end up getting a worse time than if you actually kind of, you know, took it a bit easier. Or at least your splits are going to be inconsistent.
No, I mean, sandbagging is like intentionally performing below your capability.
Oh, no. Yeah. I didn't intentionally do that.
We had a guy on my team. He was a senior when I was a freshman. He would run like, so I wasn't great my freshman year. I was never great, but I was, you know, I got down into the like mid 20s, I want to say, my freshman year. And this guy was like 20, high 22s, mid 23s. I think he ran as high as 24 for 5K. Our final race of the year. So like his last race in high school as a senior. He ran like an 18:30.
Holy fudge.
Coach was like, you SOB. Like, what have you been doing this whole time? Just out there jogging? Like, what's going on? But yeah, I still have no explanation for that whatsoever. But
yikes.
Yeah, it was pretty wild.
I can't remember my 5K time. I really, it just didn't get my, it didn't really hold my interest. But the mile, my mile time was 5:41. That was my best mile.
Ooh, that was cool. That's about the same as my best time mile.
Nice.
Yep.
Definitely couldn't match that today.
No.
No, because I stopped running like 12 years ago. No. 15 years ago.
I will say to your earlier comment, though, I did enjoy track meets more than cross country meets by far.
Yeah.
But cross country as an experience, I enjoyed more in the just in the sense of family and camaraderie.
Yes, I'm the exact same.
It's like a totally, I've never been a part of, like, within athletics, the community around cross country is so tight knit.
Yep.
It's worth doing just for that. Even the meets suck.
100%. The camaraderie, the unitedness, the practices, just hanging out with like your friends there and doing the exercises was so much more enjoyable than track. And track practices were okay. They weren't bad, but they, you know, in track, you're with a much smaller group and everybody else is like off doing their own thing. Whereas cross country, you're all in the same boat together. And just that, that really helps make it a much more, just a much more entertaining and fulfilling experience. And some of the cross country practices was okay. Your guys' job, like your practice today, is just go on to on a long run, you know, for an 8 mile run. So it's like you just and you group up, and it's like beyond that, it's like just go on an 8 mile run, or you know, run for I don't know, like an hour and a half, 90 minutes or something. And it's like beyond that, it's like go do whatever you want. So it's like you would always just group up with like, hey, you guys want to go run Medicine Lake or something? Then you go, and then you run across other groups doing their own routes. And yeah, it was awesome. Track was much more rigid and much more segregated is the wrong word. And clicky is also not. I mean, everybody was split apart in their own cliques. Doesn't mean that they were specialized. Yeah, they weren't at each other. They weren't like gossiping about each other. It was just everybody was separate. You were on the track a lot more doing practices, which makes sense. And the track's a much less picturesque, enjoyable setting than if you're just running through neighborhoods or running through a park or running, you know, around a lake, which is a much more natural, picturesque, memorable experience. But the track meets were a lot more fun because it was much more competitive. You have all this stuff going on. Oh, you got your own race coming up. You got to go get ready. And the races weren't as long and grueling as a 5K.
Right. Yeah. And you can see how people are doing the whole time. It's like you're watching your teammates compete instead of just gasping for breath.
Right. And that's the other thing with cross country meets is a lot of the time, like, cause they have to go on like a whole 5K circuit. So a lot of the time the runners are like way off on the other side of this giant area that you may not even be able to see. So really you're just waiting around while a bunch of people are running around this route that you can't see most of anyway. Right. And then you're just waiting for your turn to go up to the starting line.
But your coach has been there a dozen times and knows the route, and so he'll pop out of the bushes with a stopwatch.
Yes.
Oh, he's like, you're 10 seconds under your split. Keep going.
Oh,
like,
my gosh. Oh, that's bringing back memories of, the coaches running around, just darting in their short shorts and, like, the running shorts with the stopwatch and clipboard. Oh, man.
It's like you can take the girl out of the country, but you can't take the country out of the girl or whatever.
Yep. It's exactly what I was thinking, yes.
Yep. That's like we had Andrew on with Shania Twain.
Oh, man.
Anyway. Okay.
I did hit, so back to the thing that started that whole tangent. So would I consider running a game? And I said, ooh, no. Actually, I may retract that. And if you're running a race, I would consider that a game. If you aren't running a race, like if you're just running to enjoy it, or you're running to practice for a race, I wouldn't call that the sport in and of itself. I would call that you're practicing for the sport. You're training. And training is not the sport itself. It comes with the sport. But when you say, hey, do you want to go play baseball? You know, you're not warming up your arm. That's not what they're referring to. They're not referring to, ground ball drills or hitting drills. You know, they're talking about the game itself, the sport. And running is the same. I would say, so yeah, in that respect, running is a game if you're running to either beat your own time or you're running in a race. So racing, I would say, is a game.
Okay. All right.
Now, I haven't qualified what a game is yet. I'm just saying, yes, by my unspoken definition, I would consider racing a game.
Okay. So let me take a stab. I think I've got a pretty decent working definition of a sport, and I may be able to provide one for a game, but I'll take a stab and you can rebut if you want.
But
or modify. So for me, a sport is the intentional expenditure of physical energy or entertainment or fun. And I would also add, I think there's a component of it, not necessarily always true, but generally true, that it's done, I guess you could say, for both the sport and the game. Maybe it's not a differentiating factor, but it's generally done with others. You certainly can do a sport by yourself in some instances, or a game. But it's something that's best done cooperatively, or done to its fullest cooperatively, I would say. So that's
okay.
Sorry, I'll pause. Do you want to add anything to definition of a sport, or should I move on to the?
Well, I thought you were done giving your definition, and I was like, well, we just talked about running. So is running, just trying to beat your personal best at a marathon or just at a 5K or just some random distance? And I don't mean you're doing it as a part of an official marathon or an official 5K. You may just plot out your own route and go off on a Saturday. Would that not be a sport? Cause that's not cooperative.
No, I would say that is a sport. Yeah. Cause I mean, it's the basic tenet is that you're expending physical energy for fun. Or maybe I should say, you could say electively, like you don't have to. It's not a need for your you know, you're not outrunning a lion or something like that.
Right. You're doing you're doing it for entertain for, yeah.
Because you wanted to.
Yeah. You're doing as you want.
Whether it was, yeah. But I would, the reason I made that clarification is because I think even someone who's doing it like for the purpose of physical fitness, I would still consider it a sport, even if it's not quote unquote for fun. It's something that they wanted to do electively.
Can you go over your definition one more time? Because there's one element I want to make sure is or isn't in there.
So I said something to the effect of the intentional expenditure of physical energy for fun or entertainment.
And then did the so was the cooperation?
Oh, the with others is like another layer. I think that, like I said, I think that's generally true, but it doesn't have to be. Like it's kind of a common characteristic of sports, but it's not always true. So
if there are others involved that would help you consider it a sport, but it isn't necessary.
Yeah. So it's like if you made a Venn diagram of sport, like where trying to think of what it would look like, but anyway, where you had an individual doing something and multiple people doing it, you know, I think for sport you could have overlap on like 80% of that. So it's not always true of a sport, but I think it's, you know, some sports, okay, can I go play baseball by myself? No, right? I can go throw a baseball up into the air and catch it, but am I actually playing the sport of baseball? To your earlier point, I think you could argue no. So there's kind of some gray area there where, yes, I'm kind of participating with a baseball in some of the disciplines of baseball, but I'm not really playing baseball unless there are other people there because it's a team sport. Now, something like running, obviously, I can fully participate in that sport without anybody else there.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I can even compete against my own times if I want.
Right. So two things, the one that I was mentioning earlier, one is the thing I was looking for earlier. And then another one actually just popped up in my head is an element of competition? And notice I said element, right? You can have a sport where there's points or some sort of system of me versus you or us versus something. And how strictly you adhere to that and how much you care is, you know, variable. But do sports inherently need to have like an element of competition?
That's a good question.
I would say my first reaction is yes. But so would games. So this is not, or games, let me collect my thoughts. The competition element may be necessary for sports. And it may also be in games, but excuse me, but is not necessary for games. But therefore, taking those 2 points together is not the differentiator between sports and games, unless it could be. But then there's unless somebody wanted to consider that the differentiating factor between games and sports. But I think that'd have some interesting implications if that's what somebody considered the difference.
Yeah, I don't know how you could make that the difference, but it is an interesting question because I think certainly competition is a hallmark of sports, I would say, but it also cooperation is also a hallmark of many sports in the sense that, like, in cross country, certainly I had competition. There was somebody running next to me, you know, from another school that I wanted to beat. But by the same token, we were all really in it together against the pain of 5 kilometers of running.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so there's a sense in which we were allies and enemies at the same time. And I was, as much as I wanted to beat the person next to me, I was also happy to see them succeed and, you know, to improve their performance and that kind of stuff. Maybe I'm just not competitive enough, but that was to me, that was the nature of cross country, is that it's kind of everybody versus the clock. And so there's, depending on how you define the element of competition, because to me, then the, like in that context, the competition is against the clock, mm-hmm. not necessarily against the person next to me, which is actually the reverse is true. Your time doesn't really matter as long as you beat the person next to you in cross country. Mm-hmm. But, in terms of like my mental framework, that's kind of how it worked.
Yeah. Well, and remember, so, I brought up the point. It's like it could, the competition element could be you versus other people or all of you versus something else, which in this case would be the clock. Now, as and when it comes to, you're right, it's kind of a gray area with cross country, because are you against the clock or are you against the person next to you? It's kind of like yes, depending on what aspect right. of the sport you're talking right. about. But I just want to interject that thought.
No, that's good. And I think it brings out another element. I mean, you used the word element. It brings out another layer of the definition of a sport that I didn't really address in my first, which is that there are rules and there is an objective, right? So it's not just any old activity. So having said it, like maybe this is a way to clarify. If I just go out for a run through the forest, that's physical exercise. It might be for fun, but it's not, I guess by my the definition I'm working on right now, I wouldn't say that's a sport because there's no rule or objective to that run.
Yes.
And like
if somebody at work said, yeah, I love, I'm in sports all the time. Oh, really? What do you do? It's a, I go on runs. Oh, like you're in races? No. Just going jogs.
Right. Right.
Like, well, it's not really a sport, pal. You know, that would be my gut reaction.
Right. There has to be some sort of a measure of success. Right. And so whether that's a clock, whether that's points, whether that's, what other methods do we use to score things in sports?
So time, kind of clock or points, pool. That's not really points. It's like the first to an objective, but that's not necessarily clock based.
What would you call that? That's like a objective based.
The first person. Yeah. I guess you could. I mean, you're. You could argue that it's clock based just because it's the first person to meet this objective.
Yeah, sure.
But
yeah. Yeah, but so the point being, I think there is a distinction there that it's that expenditure of energy for fun includes rules and an objective, like an agreed to set of rules and an objective. Now, you certainly, I suppose, for Kelvin and Hobbes fans, could be a Kelvin Ball participant and kind of be running around your front yard making up the rules as you go. And you could call that your own sport, but I don't necessarily know that you'd get anyone else to agree that that's a sport or okay. play that sport with you.
Could you even consider it a sport if you're playing it? Well, yeah, never mind. That thought's not going to go anywhere. But your point about rules, that was the second point I wanted to bring up. And it's not rules just for rules' sake, but it's everybody agrees to what they're doing. You know, if you get two groups together and say, hey, you guys want to play a game of baseball? Sure. Say, okay, that's three outs. We're up. It's like, no, it's five outs, per whatever.
Right.
And
right.
say, I scored on the base. That's 2 points. It's like, no, it's 1 point. No, it's two. It's like, you guys aren't playing the, that's not a sport. Everybody needs to agree to like the objectives and the rules. And this is what we're going to play.
Yeah. And I would also say that the rules are, I think by definition, arbitrary in the sense that I guess it's not always true, but like they're not connected to reality. There's not something fundamental about the universe that makes us design the rules that way. Mm-hmm. It's that the participants, as you were saying, have come together over time and established a set of rules that govern how the game is played or the sport is played. And it's not because, you know, the wavelength of a certain type of light is so long or whatever. It's just like, no, oh, this is what we're doing. Seemed good to us and everybody's agreed to it. So that's what it is.
Yeah, it's. I don't think arbitrary is a bad word for it. Arbitrary isn't necessarily bad. You know, we need to agree on something. We all need to come to a consensus. It doesn't really matter what that consensus is.
Right.
It's like your point about racing. Your time doesn't matter. It just matters that you beat the guy behind you.
Right. Yeah.
It doesn't matter what the rules are. You just need to agree on a set of rules.
So I think we can pivot a little bit into talking about the game aspect of it, but one of the things, you know, we're talking about esports at the beginning, but one of the quote unquote sports that has bothered me for ages as being defined as a sport is something like NASCAR being a sport.
I thought you were going to say chess.
Well, I don't know that I've heard chess referred to as a sport, but for me, like I also think about people who ride horses, like equestrian. You know, they get to go to the Olympics, where it's like, okay, I understand there's skill involved, but a significant portion of how well you perform is also the horse, right? It's not just you as a competitor. But so for NASCAR, it's like, you know, I understand it's grueling. I understand it's hot. I understand there's skill required. You know, it's not an easy thing to do, but also you're sitting in a chair being dragged along by, you know, 800 horsepower or whatever it is. And so to me, things like that have never quite felt right being defined as sports. I've never quite been sure what category to put them in, but they didn't feel right to me as sports.
I don't know, man. NASCAR drivers, like, it's pretty grueling in that car. I mean, they are exerting, they are exerting themselves physically. So it does meet that criterion.
Okay, but so is that, like, let's put it this way. If you and I were to go race our cars around the streets of Cedar Falls, where we have like air conditioning and whatever else, would that be a sport?
Another point, reaction time and the skills to build that, your reaction time up or reaction time down, I guess, reaction speed. Like they have to train. I think they do have to train themselves to react quick enough. So that's not physical strength or endurance, but it is a physical skill.
So it's so there's another layer here of physical coordination. I'm not saying hand-eye coordination because it's not always hand and eye, although that usually is involved. Like soccer would be foot and eye coordination, right? Or whatever. But so there's you're saying reaction time is part of it. There's kind of a nimbleness in a lot of sports. Your ability to dynamically respond without knowing what's coming, right? You just have to react in the moment and make the right move. Yeah, that's fair. I don't know. I feel like there's got to be a subcategory or a somewhat distinct category.
It is a competition.
Yeah. I feel like maybe there would just be another category that's like a human powered sport versus aided sport, you know, or I don't know, where you have some other locomotion method.
So it seems like a big that for you, it's like, the point of a sport is you are using your body for the, like, to do the job that needs doing.
Right.
Now, equestrian sports or activities versus, and then like NASCAR, you are using your body, sure, but you're really just using it as like in the intermediary to control the thing that's actually doing the work.
Right. It's like my body's participating because it has to for my mind to be there, in essence.
Yeah.
So I was actually thinking about it. I mean, they do call them motorsports, right? Which I think is a fair, like racing. I think it's a fair classification where it's implying that it's a type of sport, but that the motor is the primary energy source, right? Mm. It's not me. It's whatever motor I have.
I see. Okay. So
we need horse sports.
Horse sports. Well, equestrian sports, maybe, are they called that? Or equestrian games, even? Yeah. Now, so is that something that you want to say is a criterion for what makes a sport? Is your body needs to be the thing doing the job?
I personally think like that is the truest form of what sport has been throughout history. It's like, we're getting out there and we're getting some physical activity, right? It's not, the physical activity isn't a byproduct of me sweating my tuchus off inside of a hot race car, right? Like, so it's not, I mean, it certainly takes a lot of skill. It's just a different type of skill. And it's a, I don't know, to me, it's a different thing. Yeah. I think attaching a modifier to it is fine. To me, the modifier still puts it in a different circle of the Venn diagram.
Like right.
There's some overlap, but it's not wholly under the umbrella of sport. There's like this other piece that hangs out.
So two notes. One, I want to sort of modify what I said. Not that your body is the thing doing the job, but it's your body is what's providing the power. So I was thinking of baseball, right? If you're hitting the ball, you're not hitting the ball. The bat's hitting the ball. So does that disqualify it as a sport, or at least disqualify it from that criterion of the thing doing the job? I was like, well, technically, yeah. And even running, right? It's not you, it's your shoes. It's like, okay, buddy.
I was going to say, you're like pole vaulting or skiing or.
Right. So I was like, well, you know, technically, if somebody wanted to be that, you know, finicky about it, they're not really wrong. But, and so technically they wouldn't be wrong. So what's, you know, what's the spirit of what I'm trying to get to? Maybe what I said was too specific. So I think it's your body needs to be providing the power to meet your requirement of, you know, it's not aided by a motor, it's not aided by a horse, it's your body doing it. What I was saying was like your body doing the job. When I say doing the job, I mean providing the power. You could use implements like a bat, or shoes, or a pole in pole vaulting to amplify what the human body can do, but it's still the human body providing the power.
Yeah, and I would, just to clarify, I would argue, like, make it clear that that is the potential energy of your body, whether chemical or physical, gravitational, whatever you want to call it. But like, so skiing, for example, you're able to generate that speed. I mean, obviously gravity is what's pulling you down the hill, right? But it's your body mass over top of the skis that's the potential energy driving you down that.
Oh, sure. And I would argue too, the sport isn't just you're going down a mountain or down a hill. The sport is you're doing so in the skillful and weavy and like, you know,
yes,
manner that you're not just a ragdoll flopping down a hill.
I mean, right. That does happen periodically as well.
And in that, in the case that I'm talking about, it is still your body that is, that is making the difference between just being a ragdoll and, or powering the difference that's between you just being a ragdoll and you skillfully skiing down the hill.
Yeah. And for anyone who's been skiing, you know that it is physically exhausting.
Yeah.
If you're doing it with any level of aggression. So my point was only to play devil's advocate and argue the counterpoint, which I think could still be reasonably justified within your definition. So,
yeah. the other thing I wanted to bring up is the point that it needs to be your body providing the power, or, you know, providing the power of the activity that is the thing you're concerned about. Such as in the case of skiing, sure, your body isn't providing, you know, it's the gravitational field, or technically, you want to get real technical, it's the ski lift providing the energy, and not your body, and not even the earth. It's a ski lift. Oh, shit, I lost my train of thought. What was it?
Ooh, self-interruption. I like it.
That criterion does not necessitate that the activity you're doing is inherently physically exhausting or strenuous. Because I was about to say, in chess, it is your body doing the physical activity, which is moving the pieces. But moving those chess pieces, you know, not a physically exerting process.
Yeah, that's true.
So here we need both.
Here, I think I'm running into a little bit of what I, in my head, I almost have two definitions of the word game. Excuse me one second.
No.
And I think we talked about this, something similar. I'm trying to remember which topic it was. Oh, where we were talking about like insects and bugs, mm-hmm. or salad.
Are insects technically salads?
Yes. how would you like to have a Caesar salad? And maybe if I frame it this way. So to me, chess is certainly a game. And I could also say, like, the statement, have you ever watched the game of football? Something like that. Mm-hmm. But
it's a football game, yeah.
Or a football game, right? So I think to one of your earliest points, there is a sense in which sports are a subset of games. And so what I'm trying to figure out is, what is the other within the full definition of, or the general definition of a game? Maybe we can come up with that. But what is that other subset that is a game but not a sport? What differentiates it? And to me, I would just still call those things games, right? Because like playing Monopoly, there's not, to the extent that like a sport is physical exertion, even though I'm still expending calories to think and make decisions for Monopoly and move tokens, it's not physically exerting. And so it's not a sport. Monopoly is not a sport. So it falls under that broad definition of game, and the narrower definition of game that I would use to apply to non-physically demanding pastimes.
Question: do sports, for it to be a sport, does it have to, and maybe this isn't the best definition, but bear with me and hopefully you'll get the spirit of what I'm trying to say. Does it have to test your physical capabilities? Right, like you're in the sport of racing, of a cross country and track. You're trying to run as fast as you can. You're trying to run this race as fast as you can, be it 2 mile, 1 mile, 400 meter. 400 yards. In baseball, right? You're trying to how fast can I throw this ball? How precisely can I throw this ball where it needs to go? How hard can I hit this ball? And how far can it go? How fast can I run to the next base? You need to push yourself and challenge your physical capabilities. Is that a requirement for a sport? Because I think that's refining the physical exertion thing. Because the point that's coming out to me is any activity, like even chess, it requires you to physically move the pieces. So you're technically moving your body. And using your body, it's like, So is that, could that be considered a sport just as involved physicality? You know, I think that's a extreme example of no, that's not a sport just because of the physical aspect. But you're right, it does contain physical stuff. So in that case, I think the answer is obviously no. Chess is not a sport based on, or excuse me, it can't be called a sport just because of its level of physical involvement. You know what I mean? It may be considered a sport for another reason that we haven't touched on yet, but I'm saying specifically for that reason, it can't be a sport. Now, chess is obvious. Monopoly is obvious. But there's going to be some, you know, activities where it's like, okay, now the line's getting a little fuzzy of whether it's a sport or not based on the physical side. So I'm wondering if it needs to be that you have to, you're pushing yourself to the limit. You're pushing your body to the limit in some way.
So a couple thoughts. The first one is, I don't think pushing your body to the limit is the right definition, even if we do need a tweak there, because certainly, you know, beer league softball is not people pushing themselves to the limit, or maybe it is. But I think I think there are plenty of people who engage in sports that aren't pushing themselves to the limit. It's leisurely, casual, whatever. Right.
I do have a thought on that. I'll let you continue, but I do have a counterpoint to that.
Okay. Let me try to remember what my other thought was. The other piece was to me, it's a question of what is the primary, I don't know if you want to call it plane or dimension, required to participate in the sport or in the activity, right? Is it mental or is it physical? And maybe that's still not a good definition, because certainly some sports require a lot of mental effort or whatever. But what I was trying to get to is, like, to play chess, I could be sitting across a room and tell someone to move my piece for me, and they can do just as good of a job of moving the pawn from one square to the next as I can. Yeah. Right. They may not have any idea of the strategy. They may like know nothing about chess. Literally all they have to do is move one piece. But so everything about how the game is being played physically, someone else could do, and it would have no impact on the outcome. Versus if I were a professional baseball player, right, I can't tell someone else how to hit the ball or tell someone else how to pitch it or catch it or whatever and get the same outcome as if I do it.
Right.
And so to me, like, that's the distinction that's kind of what I'm thinking of in my mind. It still probably has some fuzzy areas and overlap, but that's what I've got right now.
No, I think that's a good litmus test. And so the whole, like, surrogate thing, you're right. Like, playing Monopoly, your skill at Monopoly is not dependent on how physically, is not dependent on your physical prowess to move your token from one square to the other. Now, someone may say, well, it's dependent on your accuracy. It's like, yeah, I'm talking about, like, okay, you and some Joe Schmo can both move the token to the same square, but if it takes you half the time that Joe Schmo does, or if your pawn is directly in much closer to the direct exact center of the square than Joe Schmo's is, it's like, it doesn't matter. That's
right.
You know, who cares? Like, that has no impact on the game. As opposed to if you're, you know, shooting a basketball from the 3-point line, your precision is very important amongst other aspects as well.
Right.
Yeah. And I think your surrogate player, right? Like, yeah, if Bobby Fischer got injured and needed to, like, tell someone to move the piece for him to where he wanted the piece to go, the game wouldn't be any different. But if Michael Jordan got injured and was like, you know, hey, Jack, I need you to sit in for me in the NBA championships, or, you know, stand in for me in the NBA championships. Don't worry. Yeah. I'll give you an earpiece. I will tell you, like, even down to the, like, I'll tell you when to step, how to step, when to shoot, how to go. I'll tell you exactly what to do every second of the way. It's like, okay, but I'm not going to be able to perform, buddy. Like, it's not going to happen.
Right. Right. So I think it's, in its simplest forms, it's like if you put the difference is like if you put an amateur's, how would you say this?
If you swapped, if the experts swapped brains with some random guy, would their performance be affected?
Well, yeah, obviously. I mean, so like an expert baseball player, right? They're part of what makes them good at hitting the baseball is all the repetition and the muscle memory, their body and brain together know what to do.
Yeah.
But certainly if you put their brain into an amateur, they're not going to do as well because they don't have the physical attributes. Yeah. Right. But if you assume that an amateur, you know, like their muscle memory was perfect somehow with a brain that had never seen baseball before, then yes, I think however you want to distinguish that, I think that's the differentiating factor is uh-huh. that you could put a chess master's mind into the body of an amateur and they would still be a chess master.
Yep.
Right. You can't do the, put
LeBron James' brain in the body of a 7-year-old child.
Yes, he is not going to be LeBron James.
Get absolutely bulldozed in the paint.
It would be really funny though for the person like that happened to that actually thought they were LeBron James and they're like this 4'6" scrawny white kid.
Oh man,
like I'm going to dunk on you, and you're like, okay, I'd like to see.
Okay, so I think this whole physical surrogacy test is a good, it's a good litmus test or like a good condition. Like if you swap brains or if you put the master's brains into the body of some random amateur untrained guy, would they still perform the exact same? Or at least, you know, close enough to where it didn't matter. If the answer is no, then it's in the column of then it's likely a sport, depending on how it fares against these other criteria.
Yep.
I like it. Because like there's always been that talk about does it involve physicalness or not? And it's like, well, if it does, if that's a requirement, then there are other things that aren't sports that require physical, you know.
So this actually this brings up like you look at sports, quote unquote sports, things that you might see competitively, and you're like, man, these people do not look athletic in any way, right? Because there's a very clear like one-to-one connection between athletics and sports. Maybe not one-to-one, but very close. But I was just thinking about bowling.
Yep.
Like you watch professional bowlers, some of them look reasonably in shape, some of them very clearly are not. Or trap shooting, right? So I think with these definitions, I would argue that they do fall into the category of game and not sport.
Mm. Could be.
Or at least they're close on that fuzzy line.
Yeah, I was going to say the physical surrogacy test, you know, does their muscle memory go with the brain or not? That's a question. Because then there's a difference between you know, baseball or basketball where they need to have the precision and the dexterity to launch the ball or to swing the bat in just the right way, but they also need the power behind it.
Right. Yeah.
And having that precision is one thing, but having the precision and power is another. And I think if the precision goes along with the brain, but the power doesn't and the physical conditioning, then that's a good indicator, if the action requires the physical conditioning as well as the brain and muscle memory conditioning, then it's likely a sport. So that's something like baseball, basketball, football. But things like pool or bowling or chess. What was the other one you brought up? Trap shooting. Yeah. Requires muscle memory, right? Like the bowlers and the trap shooters, like the precision they have to have. I'm not saying that doesn't require training. I'm not saying that isn't impressive, but it doesn't require the physical strength and building your body up. And
yeah,
in trap, your body is also not providing the power.
Right. Which isn't, I mean, in bowling it is, but.
Yep, bowling it is.
So I'm gonna go out on a limb here with a little bit of a hot take, maybe offend some people, which would be interesting.
You know, we do have a close personal friend who is a bowling coach, so
we do.
Be careful.
And Joe, if you're listening, lay it on me. I'd love to hear.
If you are listening, Joe, and you're offended, please know that Ben totally meant it personally. He's really saying
specifically.
This
about you. So my theory is that there are hierarchies of sport in terms of athletic ability. Mm-hmm. And something like bowling or trap or whatever are at the lowest end of the spectrum. So maybe it's more than a game. Maybe it's a sport. I could even grant that. But if it is, it's at the bottom. And what I mean by that is the people who are professionals in that, like anybody who got the same amount of reps could essentially ascend to that level. There's no physical traits that you have to be born with to succeed in that activity, right? Like, to succeed in basketball, you have to have some physical traits. To succeed in football, you have to have some physical traits. To succeed in baseball, you got to have some physical traits to some degree. But like some of those sports, to me, it kind of seems like, hey, I was a really competitive person. I wasn't good enough to compete in this other sport. So now I'm doing this and my hand-eye coordination are good, right? And so I'm just going to start to get reps. And then once I have reps, I'm successful and I'm winning.
I see. So you're saying for bowling, it's purely practice. Like anybody could become a professional bowler, or at least on par with a professional bowler, as long as they have the discipline and take the time to practice. Whereas somebody like, not everybody can be a professional basketball player.
Yeah. And I wouldn't say, I would say it this way. There is no physical attributes that I know of which gives someone a professional level trajectory in bowling or in trap, right? Like anybody from all shapes and sizes can compete in it. And when you look at the professionals, they're in all shapes and sizes. So
what's the Jim Gaffigan joke? It's like, if you're sweating, he's like, they have that, like, he's like talking about bowling. I love bowling alleys. They have the little hand dryer thing.
Oh, yeah.
If you're sweating while you're bowling, you're out of shape. And if you're out of shape and you're bowling, you're probably a professional bowler.
You do that so well. Even the timing and the intonation and everything.
I have seen that special so many times, or listened to it at least.
Well, why do you want to hang out with your family? That sounds like a bad idea. Okay, so it seems like we have a pretty good definition now for within this overarching category of a game. We've now got two subcategories, one that's physically oriented in sport and one that's mentally oriented in this category, also called game or games. So what I'd like to do with the last few minutes is there any other name we could either give to the mental game category or to the overarching category that would more clearly delineate so that we don't have this, which type of game do you mean? Like, which type of salad are you going to bring? If I say, do you want to play a game? And you're expecting Monopoly, and I thought Duck, Duck, Goose. Yes.
Is that a game? Fighting for your life and some ironic, like a life-threatening puzzle.
Yeah.
Are puzzles games?
Ooh.
Are puzzles sports? Are sports puzzles? You went out to win the trophy, but what you really won was insight to yourself.
Wow. That's something.
Anyway, sorry. So you're saying, like, is there, should we have, like, what, there's games, there's sports, and then they're, but together they're blank. Like, there's cars, there's trucks, but together they are automobiles.
Yes. So there's games, there's sports, and together they are...
Leisurely... not leisurely activities, because that includes non-game stuff.
Diversions?
Like fishing. If you're just out fishing for... because you enjoy fishing. You're not doing it to... You know, games, maybe there's like some objective. There has to be some objective you're going for. Like,
well, so that's the overlap with sport, right? Is there are rules and there's an objective. There is some an element of competition, you might say. So I think that's where they share their commonality with sport. And then the physical element is what differentiates sports.
And games.
But I don't have a better name for that broad category.
Right. Ben, somewhat of a tangent here. You know, you said that trap shooting and bowling, they require, you're not debating that they don't, wait, you're not there. You're not saying that they don't require skill. You're just saying that, there's no physical attribute prerequisites, right? Anybody can be a good bowler if they put the time and the effort and the discipline in. Anybody can be a good trap shooter if they put the time, the discipline, and practice in to get the precision.
I want to be clear, like, there probably are some attributes, like some immeasurable hand-eye coordination or something, right, that would give someone an inherent ability to be a better bowler. But it's something significantly less obvious than the fact that you need to be relatively tall to play basketball, right? And fast and strong and able to jump, right? Like, they're very clear, not just physical attributes, but athletic attributes.
Mm-hmm.
That it's like, if you don't have a pretty good combination of those, you're just not going to make it, right?
Yep. No matter how much effort and practice you put in.
Right. And so you have people like Muggsy Bogues, as an example. He was, I think he played for the Hornets or something in the NBA. And he was, I'm pretty sure he was like 5'2 or something.
Holy
maybe shorter.
Crap.
Yeah.
What's this guy's name? I got to look him up later. Not now, because it's against our rule.
Muggsy Bogues. So he's, for reference, he's in Space Jam. He's the short guy in Space Jam.
Oh, okay.
And he played in the NBA for, I don't know, I want to say over 10 years, maybe seven, maybe, I can't remember. Anyway. So he clearly was lacking the height attribute, but he could still run. He could still jump, right? He could still shoot. Like, he had all the other attributes necessary for basketball. Height was the one that was missing. But you look at, I mean, virtually every other player in the NBA is 6+. Right. So between 6 and 7.5 feet.
I'd say if you're below 6'5", I think you're on the shorter end of the NBA stock.
Right. Right. So that's just something where if you're slow and 4 feet tall, the NBA is not for you. Right. No matter how much you practice, whatever, it's just not going to be your game. Whereas you could be really good at pool or bowling.
Now, I brought this back up because I think there is something that falls in a very similar category to bowling and trap shooting. And I'm sure bowlers and trap shooters are not going to enjoy this comparison or this partnership. Esports.
Okay. Elaborate.
Everybody can get good at playing Call of Duty if they build up their reaction time and their finger dexterity enough.
Okay. Okay. This is a really interesting point because I watch quite a bit or listen to quite a bit of Age of Empires 2 competitive play.
Nice.
So I've played it for a long time, but I also listen to people who cast it and watch professional tournaments and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I've listened to a lot of guys talking about how they're almost professional, but they're playing more than full time, practicing 50, 60 hours a week in matches right, to get better at this game. And they still can't attain the level of the top, truly top tier guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is, like, anybody who puts in the reps can be extremely good, but there still is something about whether it's how fast your brain processes visually or how quickly you can click, you know, the buttons on your mouse or whatever. There still are a couple of attributes that differentiate the ones who are the truly elite, extreme cream of the crop from people who are just extremely good. And
so you're saying that Age of Empires is more sports-like than bowling. Joe, I hope you're listening, paying attention.
No, because it's still primarily a mental thing, right? And maybe the mental element is the dominating one there. But my point was only that anybody can be good at it. In, again, that sense of physical athleticness, you don't have to have a certain build or a certain whatever, but it's more about what your mind is capable of. The other thing that I was reminded of as a slight tangent was that for a number of years, I had this dream of being in the Olympics, and I didn't really care how. I just, like, we always watched the Olympics growing up. We didn't have a TV, but we would rent a TV during the Olympics. And so it's like got so much fanfare and, you know, just watching the opening ceremonies and everybody waving flags and this big parade and like everybody smiling, waving. I was like, man, I want to do that someday. And so there was a period of time, I think when I was in high school, where I was like, I'm not good enough at any of the like major sports to ever make it at an Olympic level.
Mm-hmm.
So I started doing some research of like which sports have the oldest competitive athletes in the Olympics, right? So like which sports would I have the most opportunity to get into and get good at to actually compete in the Olympics?
Oh, I see. Because you would have the time. Like if the average age, throwing a number out, was 40 and you figured that out in high school, you would have upwards of like 20, 25 years to practice.
Right. So I'd have more time to practice, and the assumption that if people are competitive at an older age, it's something that isn't as directly tied to your physical prowess necessarily. Gotcha. Right. And I think one of the reasons it came to mind is because I can't remember the lady's name, but the U.S. had a gold medal trap shooter. I think she was gold medalist. She'd won like 3 or 4 in a row. And I think her last Olympics, she was like 42 or something like that.
Oh, dang.
But anyway, I was like, you know, I should do trap because it's not a sport. Well, that's the other thing. There aren't a whole bunch of people that do it relative to a lot of other sports, right? So inherently, there's a smaller pool of people who might be eligible to compete. And then you can be viable competitively for longer. And obviously, a lot of people aren't starting that at the age of, you know, 6. So there aren't really a bunch of people with a head start. So I was trying to like basically do the calculus of how do I get to the Olympics in some obscure sport or something that would actually give me the chance to get there.
I want to also say, you know, trap is the only, or at least one of the very few sports that involves a gun. So it's got that going for it.
Right, or there with biathlon.
What's the biathlon again?
Biathlon is skiing and target shooting.
Ah.
Like, so it's like Nordic cross-country skiing, and then you stop in these sections and shoot at air rifles at targets.
So it's American cross-country skiing.
Well, it's actually, I mean, I'm pretty sure the sport evolved out of like Scandinavian patrol, like military patrol practices. Because they have, you know, long Arctic borders where the only way to get around is snowshoes or skis or whatever. And then they had rifles for obvious reasons. And so it's like, I don't know how that became a sport out of it, but that's a pretty real life application for that skill set.
Yeah. Well, I was just making the American joke. Cause like, let's just take a sport that from another country and
put a gun in it.
Yeah. Put a gun in it.
American
football really should just be, it's just like soccer, but you don't kick the ball with your foot. You shoot it with a gun.
Ooh, there you go. That for some reason that made me think of the sport of whirly ball. Are you familiar?
No.
And here again, I'm not sure if I should call this a sport. Probably not. The motorsport slash game of whirly ball is played in like a racquetball size court space.
Okay.
But it has two sets of bumper cars in it.
Okay.
And yeah, the way you said that was perfect. And at each end of the court, it has like a basketball hoop sticking out from the wall. But instead of a basketball hoop, it's just the square behind the rim.
Okay. And then in the backboard.
The backboard. But like, you know, it's got the little orange square on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's got that, but then it's got like a little pressure plate in the middle.
Oh. So
everybody gets in a bumper car with like a little plastic Hi-Li racket and a wiffle ball. There's one wiffle ball and two teams. So then what you're doing is you're basically driving around this racquetball court with your little bumper car and a wiffle ball or and a Hi-Li racket, passing the wiffle ball back and forth. And then when you get close enough to the backboard, you try to whip the wiffle ball into that little pressure plate using your Hi-Li racket.
What's a Hi-Li racket? Is that like the little sickle looking curved thing?
Yeah, they're like the curved baskets kind of.
Oh, that you usually use to like throw balls for dogs to go fetch or something?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it was like a popular kids game in the 50s and 60s where they'd make like plastic. You could get them at Walmart.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And they became more of a dog toy thing. But yeah, I don't know if it's technically Hi-Li. I almost looked it up. I'm stopping myself now. But I think that's where they originated.
Gotcha. Huh.
But anyway, it sounds ridiculous. It is amazingly fun. We played it in Minneapolis for a friend's bachelor party. And just the bumper cars element is great also because the control mechanism that they had, instead of being a steering wheel per se, it was like a
yoke.
Kind of. It was a wheel, but like with the trucker handle on it. And you could only like use one hand to turn it because you're using the other hand to jack it. But if you turned it too quickly to the left or to the right, it would assume that you wanted to go in reverse.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, don't ask me why. But so you'd be like trying to react to somebody coming towards you and you'd like veer off to the side. You turn it quickly one way and then you're suddenly going in reverse instead.
Huh.
Or you're trying to go in reverse and you're turning. So there's an element of like unpredictability to the direction that you're traveling that made it just a little bit more whimsy added.
I don't know what a trucker handle is, but is that like on one part of the steering wheel, there's basically just like a handle jutting out of it. So you, instead of gripping it like around the rim, there's like just like a post on the wheel. So then you can turn it with that. Yeah, I know. I think I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's like a knob on a like a doorknob on a bearing kind of, so you can grab that with one hand and spin it around multiple times without ever changing your hand position.
Yep.
Yeah. Which, fun fact, I believe they're illegal for cars, or at least they were in Michigan.
Interesting.
Because there's too much risk in an accident of that guy
flying off, becoming a projectile.
Or
bashing your head against it.
Yes. Turning your head into powdered sugar.
Why powdered sugar?
That's just what came to mind. I was like powdered, and then I didn't have a noun to go after it.
Well, the like, powdered what's part white was your and first powdered. Yeah, you're already too deep into the mistake at that point. Powdered.
No, I mean your skull, right?
I guess, but when you like,
have you seen Hot Rod?
Oh, a long time ago, like in college was the last time I saw it.
Andy Samberg is talking about his dad being a stuntman and how he was trying to repeat Evel Knievel's stunt. And then like his tire ruptured when he landed and his face went into the handlebars and it turned his teeth into powder. And then like,
oh,
he's like, he died instantly the next day.
Oh my gosh.
Well, we are running a little bit long here.
Yeah.
And I think we've given some pretty good definitions here, but I still want to find out a better term. So
need a part two to this conversation.
Okay. I'm game for that.
We count because right, what's the difference between a sport and a game? And we got halfway through defining what a sport is.
And only halfway? I thought we got there.
I think we're only halfway.
All right. Well, you heard it here first, folks. We will resurrect this topic in the future. Maybe next time, maybe shortly thereafter. But in the meantime, if you have heard of a term which, like we said, combines sport and game together under a larger umbrella, like cars and trucks are both automobiles. If you have a term for that related to sports and games, I'd love to hear it. Or if you have another term for game that implies just the mental element of it, not the physical part of sports, I'd love to hear that also. So, until then, you stay classy.